Fiction is First is pleased to present Anne Everton reading Field Report from America, 2014.
Everything's changing fast. We are called to change everything and change it fast. Time to separate the wheat from the chaff, time to become more happy. We're knowing misery and boredom, just like the booklet on contemporary capitalism and anxiety said. The people in Bloomington slipped that in with our merch after two separate people came up to us after our show there to tell us about how they liked our set, but it made them anxious. The booklet was called We Are All Very Anxious, 6 Theses on Anxiety and Why It Is Effectively Preventing Militancy and One Possible Strategy for Overcoming It. The strategy for overcoming the isolation this capitalism-induced modern anxiety has brought was basically to strengthen our grassroots human networks. There are a lot of changes, after all. My Chandler friend Sev remarked on this same issue, that now, more than ever, people are understanding the value of happiness above all. Where do I get this? Was it a trend in my barbering customers' stories, or something I saw repeatedly during our band's 60-show, 10-week tour across the United States this spring? Maybe it's just me. What did I do? I left my job at a hair salon, 7 years too many in the beauty industry, so I could pursue my creative career as an artist, now learning music while writing extensively on my journey in that direction, while developing my polyamorous identity, while opening a business, while becoming a true disbeliever in the sustainability of capitalism, while seeing the structures of racism and patriarchy begin to crumble and collapse for lack of true purpose. We can only hope. Did they ever have any purpose anyway? I have bore witness. Things are changing fast. There is very little water in some places and too much in others. Some places got unbelievably cold. The people of the Midwest were still shell-shocked from the cold winter they had. The people in Florida are moving inland. They can't afford the flood insurance. It's getting expensive to live in the front row of the great show of climate change. The weather's been performing interestingly, after all. Lake Mead was so low when we drove by. There is very little rain in the desert in the southwestern part of the United States to begin with, as 10 inches of rainfall or less a year defines a desert. They had under 4 inches in 2013. What is the difference between the Sahara and the Mojave? Why is one so full of life? How much longer will it be full of life? Everywhere else was cold, so cold. Snow in the deep south, snow in Florida, ice, lots and lots of ice in the Midwest. The highways were all potholes, especially around Chicago. Detroit was pretty intense too, as was expected, but Chicago was no better. Cities are poor. They have a lot of things they need to do now to make themselves be able to survive this strange weather. But some cities seem better equipped than others. Chicago is hurting. Detroit is ready. Miami is insane. Minneapolis can handle it somehow. Denver is very, very clean. The cleanest city all tour, despite being in the dusty, dry, high desert. If people start moving in a real way to Boise or to places in Arkansas, I can't blame them. Broke and sundry lesbians who maybe cannot afford San Francisco anymore flock to Orlando, helping it to feel like a real city along with its growing Vietnamese population. Florida doesn't really suck anymore in general. Florida! On one side of the highway, I smelled orange blossoms, sweet as lilies but sweeter. And on the other side, I saw a Brahma Bull Ranch. Sometimes I worry if L.A. is doomed. Sometimes I worry deeply about California. There are some crazy folks there. On the drive from L.A. to San Francisco, we passed a lot of very large farms, factory farms. The farmers had signs printed up saying how the government was hoarding the water and that there's plenty of water and it's hurting the farms needlessly and the government is evil. Money was behind the signs, but I could only see, a la They Live, the sign saying that the desert is not a place to have a farm anymore. The desert is not a place to have a lawn. things are so dry in the Southwest. We can't just dump the pee jar in the street. It's not going to rain for a long time, and the smell isn't fair. It's easy to get dirty in the desert and stay dirty if you're touring out of a van with no shower and you don't know the people there. I discovered I am a water person with long lineages linking me to the Maryland climate and our humidity. A muggy day has never ruined my fun. It was easier in the Pacific Northwest. The winter was dry in California. The redwoods withstand everything, and they are still strong and tall and filled with life. But they are readying themselves for a change as well. Still so much to learn from those goofy giants. It was dry in California all the way up north, and then north of that, lots of cold and snow on the ground for too long. In California, when we were with our friend Ethan at Harbin Hot Springs, a naked co-ed hot springs near Sebastopol, north of the Bay Area, we were the three of us sitting in a socializing allowed tub, which just so happened to be heart-shaped, talking, and there were a few other folks strewn about talking as well. One young guy near us had beautiful long curly hair, and I felt like he was some sort of naked, sexy metalhead, and he picked up on it. Ethan and Brian and I were discussing what the brown and white floating stuff was in the hot, hot bath, and we were pretty unanimously deciding it was boogers when the naked, sexy metalhead chimed in. "I work here. It's not boogers." He explained that it's a symbiotic bacteria/yeast culture, kind of like in kombucha. I'm still not sold. I still think it's boogers. I was sick with a bad cold at the time and stoned, so I engaged him in some kind of strange conversation about his job. Eventually, we stopped talking, me knowing inside that he knows. He knows. He knows I'm a freak. And he turned around and jumped up out of the pool. As he jumped, quick as a wink, his anus and balls flapped open and shut at me, like a deer flashing the white of its tail at you as it runs through the woods. Last I saw him, he was walking sexily and making his sexy way up to a secret, secluded, cold bath. We followed him, but it was too cold for us. Good thing, I saw him later, and he wasn't a magical metalhead anyways, he was just a hippie Dorcas. After the West Coast, we switched back towards Nebraska through Denver. By Nebraska, the dryness met with the cold of the Arctic vortexes of 2014. They told us all about their cold winter there with very little precipitation, colder than usual, drier than ever. The man who ran a record shop in Lincoln told us about the winter, and then told us occasionally they'd get copies of one of our holy grails, Magma's Mechanic Destructive Commando, on record, usually from collectors' collections donated in entirety. This record is almost impossible to find outside of France, its country of origin. There is a university in Lincoln, after all, which perhaps explains such a rare find. In Lincoln, we found a patch of green around the courthouse and did yoga there. It was all the green we could find. The air tasted funny, like it was stale or it had not been cleaned in a long time. I got very sick that night. Even though Brian and I ate the same food for dinner, I began having the feeling I had eaten a saw blade just after our set. I went to lie down in the car. I was almost completely over some sort of flu I had been fighting since San Diego. But I still felt weak. Brian was beautiful. He loaded in all the gear himself and took me to a man's house, a man who had kindly offered us a place to stay in his large apartment with his girlfriend. They were kind. They were from Seattle. They were artists there for the school. I saw things I had eaten hours before come out of me completely undigested in their toilet. I wondered if I was going to die in their guest bed. I was so hungry. I had lost a lot of weight by that point, by accident, as a result of being sick and on the road. And yet, for the next few days, I could only eat the brat diet. Bananas, rice, applesauce, toast, and maybe plain yogurt too, if I felt adventurous. Eventually, by Kansas City, I could eat pizza and hope to keep from losing any more weight. By that point, we came upon the Midwest, and people began bringing us into their homes very regularly and letting us stay in their beautiful spaces. We started bringing in our own grits, butter, and cheese, and asking them if we could have an egg, so we could have grits with eggs for breakfast every day if we stayed somewhere. Our friend Anna told us that grits stick to your ribs, and boy, they do. It's too cold to be thin in the Midwest. Somehow, by Detroit, I was becoming healthy and strong again. It was 7 weeks in, and we had fully accustomed ourselves to life on the road, and we were thriving. Though ready to be home again, riding our bikes and working in our garden, like the Detroiters. Theirs was a city being eaten by art, nature, and time. They're ready. Everyone was so tall in Detroit. They were our tallest audience. We thought that they were standing on chairs. We are little Marylanders. The Oregonians noticed that. The Oregonians were burly and dark and strong and tall as well. The Michigan folks grow tall as the redwoods. We visited the abandoned Michigan Central Station in Detroit. There was a chain-link fence with barbed wire snaking around it and a dumpster inside, being filled by workers who didn't know why they were clearing it out or wouldn't reveal its future use, be it condos or office spaces or shops. We saw the station from far away as we approached. Detroit is flat and sprawling enough that you can see all of the tall buildings from all over the place. The pitiful downtown with its busted stoplights, and in this case, a huge shell of a high-rise railway station, like a giant harmonica mesa. You could see right through it. The woman singing in the first band in Detroit was a pistol. Tiny, tough, soft butch gal with a short haircut and wearing a pair of Wellington boots as if she had just left from working the soil to come sing in her punk band called Collapse. Their tagline was, "Abandon your white male fantasy." The woman singing in the second band in Detroit was large and dark and brown. She looked as if she were indigenous, and she had a voice like the 70s, like the grill of a truck, like some horses flailing on the mountain in the sunset in the desert. In Detroit. Her band sounded like Deep Purple, and she was absolutely beautiful and strong and tough. They were called the Octopus. The woman singing in the third band in Detroit, on Easter, on 420, as a cloud of smoke steamrolled towards her and her man throughout the light of the projector towards the stage, was me. It was the 5-year anniversary of our first date. I invited the strong and tough Detroiters to sit on the ground in the cold warehouse, smoke a celebratory bowl, and enjoy the show, as they did. We were having our anniversary after all, so let's celebrate. It was a kind night full of kind, tall, giving people and good company. Good music, too. The 59 other shows weren't always that magical, but many of them were. Good things are happening everywhere. The world is going to shit, and all we can do is build community and prepare for less. To be kind and live cheap, that is what I'll do to get by from now on. That booklet on anxiety that showed up in our merch in Bloomington reminded us of the value of human networks. So always, from now on, be kind and live cheap and live well within that. When I got home, I was 15 pounds lighter and my face was wrinkled from smiling. Strange marriages, these bands. Grudges get held, anger doesn't dissipate, or it goes away just to resurface later. To be a good band, communication is integral. Passion is integral. Faith is integral. And of course, love for what you're doing, for your good health, for fun, for life, is integral. You want to believe that everyone on stage showing love and passion for what they do are these superhuman beings capable of no wrong. They are on a stage, after all, and enjoying it. It appears to be the epitome of confidence, and yet, behind all our screens is the little wizard pulling the levers, brimming with machinations and preparing for his manifestations. He's not bad. He's just the mind behind the facade. I smiled so much on this tour I got wrinkles around my eyes, new ones. They don't bother me, though it felt like I smiled till my face cracked, forcing positive energy even when I felt bad about something. PMA, positive mental attitude. It can be scary, forced positivity. So, that's when you make a scary face. I would rather my face crack with smiling anyway.